Welcome to Talking TRM, the Travel Risk Management Podcast. I'm Bex Debman and I'm an independent consultant specialising in ISO 31030. During my transition from corporate travel to travel risk, I met some incredible individuals driving travel risk management forward with passion and expertise. On this podcast, I'm going to chat with them about their stories and hopefully inspire our listeners to start their own travel risk management journey. Hello and welcome to another session of Talking TRM on podcast and on video for you to see us. Today, my name is Bex Debman, also known as Travel Risk Bex. I'm an independent consultant specialising in ISO 31030, travel risk management. And today I am joined by my good friend, I'd like to say, before colleague and everything else, Vanessa Harrison. She's going to tell us a little bit about herself in a moment. But Vanessa, we met, we were just talking about this before we came online. Yes. So back in 2020, through the work we're doing with BSI and ISO. And then we were just saying we actually met in person in 21. We had a sneaky little meeting, didn't we? Which was nice. At your house.
Absolutely.
And then more recently in Winchester with Sarah, which was lovely.
It was indeed.
So thank you so much for joining me today. I've given you a little bit of a brief about the questions, so it's short and sharp. But I'm really, really excited to hear your story and for us to be able to share it with everybody else. So thank you.
Well, thanks very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure.
You're very, very welcome. So let everyone know who you are and what you do.
Thank you. So my name's Vanessa Harrison. I'm an ISO management systems consultant. This means that I help organisations with implementation and auditing of management systems, which are actually risk-based. They take a risk-based approach. So this means that they're all based on an ISO standard called ISO 31000. So that's the general risk management guideline standard. I specialise in an area which is like an end-to-end solution where I think about what data assets do you have, what information assets do you have, that's what's needed to be protected, and then how are we going to do that through information security protection measures, and then what happens if it all goes wrong, how you can restore that through business continuity processes and procedures. I also work in anti-bribery risk management as well, but all of this is underpinned by general good risk management practice, which is ISO 31000 guidelines as a foundation.
Something which I only started kind of really understanding in the last couple of years, but now evangelize about constantly. So hence again, why we get on so well and we get to have these conversations about kind of making things kind of work how they should work. And I guess as best as they possibly can be to make everyone safe and everything and assets safe, all of those good things. Okay, so you've talked about the risk management piece. Obviously, the conversations and the meetings that we've had have been more about the sort of travel risk management side of things. And I know that that's a slightly new world to you, although we're really heavily into it now with all the stuff we're doing with BSI and with ISO and potentially new standards that are coming. I really want to know your why in all of this. What drives you?
Okay, so just before I go into the travel risk management side, I would like to say that I can't actually get enough risk management in my work. So I have to do it in my free time as well. On the subject of travel and movement, I'm actually risk and compliance officer for a classic car club. So that involves all areas of risk, not just the ones I mentioned in my day job, but also health and safety and child protection and other good governance. And then also I'm a volunteer standards developer. So I sit on both a national and international committee, technical committees, writing standards. So I help in developing standards like ISO 31000. So if we take that concept as a foundation and then we build on that with travel risk, that's where you can get that additional content for the specific flavor of risk or discipline of risk that you're dealing with specifically for you in your situation. When it comes to travel risk, well, this is an interesting part of actually, it links to what I do with standards. So I'm brought in on the language side. I'm a linguist by degree. So I know a lot about how to structure language, how to use language, how that can be used to simplify concepts or elaborate on concepts, and also how that could impact the translation of standards into other languages. So that's sort of my niche in standards development, as well as the actual content of, or the technical content of, RISC itself. But I suppose, having been a linguist and I've traveled a lot for work, and I've lived and worked in a lot of European countries and India and Africa and the Middle East, and I continue to do that. Just in the last quarter, I worked in Estonia, France, and in the Netherlands. So you can imagine that in my RISC management mindset, I'm thinking, okay, how does this apply to the actual pragmatic aspects of me getting from A to B in international travel and dealing with other cultures, other law, other compliance that measures that have to be adhered to when you go to other countries or other regions? So that sort of made me think, oh, well, actually, I know quite a lot about travel risk then from a user point of view. Yeah,
definitely. And I think, you know, we've shared some of your experiences, certainly through traveling through the pandemic, because in some cases you had to, didn't you? And actually how challenging that was. And actually sort of what's happened since then, because the travel industry is still trying to get back on its feet. They've got issues with operations and with staffing, and there's last minute changes, which obviously have a knock on effect. And I don't know if you are willing to share one of your stories with us, of your experience recently. Just to make this a bit real for people, because I think this is the other end of it. You know, we can talk about policies and processes and procedures until we're blue in the face, and I think that's what people think we're doing when we talk about standards. But the reason standards exist is to help the person at the end, when they're on the ground, who might need something. They don't need it all the time, but when that thing does happen, what happens? So if you'd like to share any of your stories, I would love our listeners to hear them.
So just in the last quarter, I mentioned those countries that I've visited to. So I'd been to. So out of three flights, two of those flights got me to my destination at, on average, 4 a.m. in the morning instead of the night before. And I still had to be standing in front of my customer, in some cases talking another language, at 8 a.m., you know, with having had no sleep. Two of those three flights didn't deliver my luggage. So in addition to the stress of having no sleep, I either had no materials, or because there's a limit to what you can take in your hand luggage, or there was a delay in getting that, and that caused me stress. So that's just in the last quarter. And what's interesting for me in my job is to kind of analyze from an auditor point of view what's been going on, and also to see the response of, say, the airline, and see if their processes work. And I have to say, in all of those situations, their procedures were fit for purpose, and they did what they said they would under the circumstances. Now, how I coped with that or not, with varying degrees of success. But let me just go back a bit to COVID times, traveling for one of my clients, and I went to represent them. And what horrified me was the lack of due diligence around using me as a contractor and their duty of care to me. And I found myself in a situation where there were multiple parties involved in me going on that assignment. And so lots of things got lost in translation, even quite literally as well as metaphorically, and it ended up with me actually being stranded in a place with no accommodation, and the prospect of actually having to potentially sleep on the beach. I don't think I would have done that. I think I probably would have checked if I could go to a police station and sleep in a cell before going and sleeping on the beach. But the point was, the next day I had to go and represent this client of mine to their client, and it was not acceptable. So as my husband tells me, I love to wring every last drop of every bad experience I've had, to wring it out for, like, what can I get for the good of this? And So it's helpful in some ways to have these experiences to think, well, I don't want that to happen to the next person. What can be done about it? So this actually feeds into my passion of developing standards to actually give people a baseline to work to, and to, or at least understand if they're not going to adhere to those guidelines, what they are rejecting and why, and that's a decision that they've made, and then seeing, you know, what can be done about that from whoever's involved in the assignment that's taking place.
And I think for me, there's a couple of things I want to go back that you just mentioned there, but this user experience, this understanding, this common thread that I'm finding in the people that I'm speaking to. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast. So thank you for being so honest about your experiences, because this is the bit that's missing. This is the bit that we don't really talk about. But actually, those companies that are moving, or those people that are working in this space that really are driven, is because they have had that user experience, or they know somebody that's had a user experience. And quite often, for those actions to really galvanize, it's been a really horrendous experience, you know, and we know some of the stories we've heard from some of the people that we work with, and it's, you can understand why these sort of standards need to come in and be done. But again, it's just, that's the driving force behind it, to know what it's like to actually be at the end and not know where you're. I can't even imagine being somewhere and just having to be faced with, well, I can kind of imagine it because I was there with you texting you at the time because we were having conversations. But the point being, like, literally being there on your own, you're a well-traveled woman, but, you know, you're still a woman. You were vulnerable.
So vulnerable, because you see someone walking with two heavy suitcases, you know what, that they're not from around here necessarily.
Yeah.
And it's also about, where are you going to find your resilience from as the individual? So in Estonia, when I got to the airport at silly o'clock in the morning, and I somehow had to galvanize the remaining energy I had to go and stand in front of the client, the inspiration I needed that actually came from a sticker on the toilet door at Tallinn Airport. So there I sort of thought, oh, well, here I am in a situation again where I've been delayed, but I will be professional and I will deliver my job. So it's about, how am I going to do that? And then I just popped to the loo, and there was a sticker of a big lipstick on the door, and it said, lipstick will save the day. And I read all the information about that, and it said, you know, women have been for, you know, or people for many, many thousands of years have been painting on a mask, if you like, to get themselves through what might be a potentially difficult situation. So it said, it advised me to put my lipstick on. So that's what I did. And I got through the
day. Yay! Of course it did. And I love that. I absolutely love that. I just want to, and I think that the resilience piece that I want to go back, you mentioned, and you sort of off the cuff just sort of said, you know, I coped with it in various different ways. And I don't want to go into that. What I want to touch on is, that is such a valid point. We can be fine one day. We cannot be fine the next day. We've had a whole host of stuff happen to us.
Yeah.
How are we protecting people and being aware of how they're feeling in that specific moment? You know, you see yourself, you land in different ways depending on where you were and what was going on. But yes, sorry, you can add by all means. I just didn't want to delve into it.
The mental health aspect for the individual traveller is really important. I mean, this person might actually have the energy to stand in front of their client, but afterwards fall apart because there might be something going on back at home. There might be an ill family member, or you might have something very stressful at work that's going on in the background. So we have to bear those things in mind. And I think actually my golden nugget around all of this, for a starting point, if you like, for people who are unfamiliar with sort of travel risk management, is to think about your own personal risk management, because none of this is rocket science. Okay.
No, I agree.
So think about your own personal risk management that you do day in and day out on a day-to-day basis, and think about, what do you do to get yourself safely on holiday in your leisure time that involves travel? And that could even be in your own country. It doesn't necessarily mean travel abroad, but think about the decisions you have to make around that trip, and then think about how would your decisions changed if you had to apply all of this to your work, if you had the additional responsibility given to you by your employer. So I think the golden nugget for me is to think about what you already do personally to protect yourself on all sorts of levels, because when you travel, there are so many aspects of risk. It's if I go back to the beginning, that I say I focus on information security and information asset management and business continuity, so recovering systems after there's been some sort of incident. When you travel, you have all of that as well, actually. What if you had some sensitive information on your laptop or on your mobile phone, or you had access to a system through a phone, it wasn't adequately protected? What would happen if you were ill? So you've got all the health and safety involved. What would happen about your operations management? Because when I went to Estonia, the point was I was in an operational role helping that client that day. So you're actually dealing with quite a number of risk areas that all are being sort of ticked off by the fact that you're making a journey. So think a little bit about what you might be dealing with in your leisure time, and think about how you might be in a good mindset for that because it's your holiday, but then add an additional layer of stress because you might be going to work and
have doing something you don't want to do or you're scared of, or
so have a think around your own personal circumstances and then add in some other thoughts around what you might experience if you had to do that for your work situation.
I think it's so valid because so much of the conversation is about what corporates need to do for their employees. But there's only so many processes and policies and practices and technologies and things that you can do. Part of the responsibility and part of what 3130 discusses is your employees, be that consultants, be that guests, be whoever those travellers are within your organisation, that they know what their responsibilities are, and that you're kind of helping them with that side of it as well. So this is such a good way of looking at that, because I think, you know, we've laughed at it over the years that, you know, people, we even do it ourselves when we travel for business, but you just kind of go, oh, the company's looking after all of that, so I'm just not going to think. Or I'm just so busy because I've got so much work on, I need someone to look after that. Actually, when you're the person on the ground, you need to know what's been booked. You need to check that it's all actually okay, because you're going to be the one that's being affected by it. And I don't think we do enough of this. There's countless conversations I've had where people haven't checked their confirmations until the day that they're there and they realise that it's not right. You know, the little things like that, it seems we just don't do very well anymore. Vanessa, we've come to the end of our time, but look, thank you so much. I knew it was going to be great, and it is. I'm really grateful for your time today. We've been listening to Talking TRM with Travel Risk Bex. Our special guest today, Vanessa Harrison. Thank you so very much, and we can't wait to join you on the next episode. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Talking TRM is in association with Ascent Risk Management. If you enjoyed listening to today's podcast, please subscribe and make sure to leave a review. If you need any help with implementing an ISO standard, such as ISO 31030, or if you have any questions regarding ISO, please reach out to Ascent Risk Management to talk to our expert consultants today. We can be found at www.ascent1.com. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, and links can be found in the show description. This podcast is a Clemark Studio production and was produced by Jessica Ingalls.